would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might wanna stand back, because one small John is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
The night when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Oh, that's my name. Don't wear it out. You can wear it out. You can say my name all you want. I'm John Forward is my name. That's the title of the show, sort of, with some extra stuff. Spitting some more words into the title. St. John Forward Radio. That's what you're listening to now. We're live on local FM every Monday night from 9 to 10. And this is the show. I just, if you're tuning in fresh, generally I ramble for the first little chunk while my guest awkwardly sits across from me. And then play a song, and then we get into it. Lots of interesting people coming on the show, and just to mix it up, we've got we're going a different way tonight.
Jackass.
let's get into it. Well, first we've got I didn't perform this weekend, but I attended a couple of shows. Just waiting for my Google Docs to refresh here on my phone. There we go. So we'll get to part two of my summer beef 2017 story. But talk about the shows I went to this weekend. So Friday night, new comedy show at Foundations in St. John. I'll get into that with my guest coming up later. I normally would go to Chuckles on the Friday night. I try to go every month to Chuckles if I'm in town. I wanted to check out the new one on Friday, so I ended up going to Chuckles on Saturday, which has historically been the worst of the two shows. It had moments. Lots of moments. Martin Saulnier did well, as he usually does. Chris Hovey and Pregina Maskey were there doing their Chuckles debut, I assume, and they did pretty well, so I'm sure that that felt good. I know my first appearance at Chuckles, opening for Derek Seguin, I bombed pretty epically, and that was kind of crushing. I don't remember if I pulled it together for the Saturday night or not, but definitely a gigantic bomb on Friday. The host this weekend at Chuckles also ate kind of a big one the whole time. Anyway, it is what it is. The audience certainly enjoyed the headliner. Lots of laughs, but it just was not for me. Lots of the material sounded like it's been making the rounds for at least 15 years, with the occasional old guy who doesn't understand modern things framing device added in when there's an old joke that mentions an obsolete piece of technology. But this is the first time I've ever left Chuckles during the headliner set. Like, it wasn't so awful that I had to get out of there. It wasn't bad enough for me to enjoy it, ironically. And I just wasn't into it, and I decided I'd rather go home and spend an extra half hour playing Dark Souls than enduring the rest of this set. So I took off. And anyway, I enjoyed playing my video game for the rest of the night. But I'm still going to keep going back to Chuckles. They can't all be winners, but on average, I'd say those shows are more what I'm looking for than the handful of Yuck Yuck shows that I've been to. But now, on to part two of the ongoing Summer Beef 2017 saga. So just a quick catch up. I spent last summer working as an aid worker with a special needs kid. The kid I was working with hated my guts for the most part. At one point in the summer, he found a CD on the ground, broke it in half, and slashed me across the knuckles with it. That was fun. There was good times too, but mostly bad. But I sympathize with the kid. There's a lot going on there. Last week I talked about how my, my 22-year-old supervisor, Jen, complained to my boss and HR that I sometimes took a 15-minute break or two. Made it sound as if she brought this up to me directly and that I was really insistent about it, which is, not the case, but anyway. So, after that whole thing went down, at my boss's suggestion, I decided to have like an adult to adult talk with Jen about it. And I didn't want to do it in front of people. So I saw she was putting stuff away one day. So I went and started up a conversation. In retrospect, cornering a young girl isn't a great way to start a conversation at work. I calmly suggested that in the future, if there was any issue relating to my job, that she could bring it to me directly. Anything I'm doing I shouldn't be, or anything I should be doing that I'm not, anything like that. "Oh, what do you mean?" she says. So I had to explain to her that, well, I got an email from HR and I heard you on the phone tattling to the boss about it couple of weeks ago, and even though the last and only conversation we've ever had about it was when you said, "Yeah, I don't blame you. I used to take breaks when I did your job, too." Well, she thought that when I had that conversation that I meant that I was going to take 2 15-minute breaks instead of my 30-minute lunch break, not a 30-minute lunch and breaks like some sort of 35-year-old man who's working with active children. I said, "Well, you should have said something to me, and I would have at least looked into it. I would have put the brakes on pause until I was confident that I was in the right." It turned out that I wasn't, but never had that opportunity. So I just would prefer that she came to me with stuff like this and we could have worked it out instead of going on my back and tattling on me as if we were in some sort of a thing about it. But conversation didn't have the same closure I was expecting. Either high standards for a 22-year-old, maybe, or is she just an awful person? Probably. I spoke to a few of the old timers in the organization who told me that I'm certainly not the first person that that Jen's clashed with. She's not a people person, has a bit of a control issue, and we all know how it goes when you mix a person like that with a little John Forward. We get beefs. So my boss did ask me months later if I ever gave her a heads up when I was taking a break, and I did not. I gave a heads up to like the other guy that I would watch my kid for me while I was taking a break, but you know, I never asked her directly, which I guess could have been seen as a slight. I didn't intentionally mean it that way. It was probably a little bit of me that was just being a dick, but used to having a grown-up job where I don't need to check with my boss every time I'm going to take a 15-minute break, but anyway, I walk away from this meeting with some kind of weird look on my face, probably. And my camp ward was he chose to speak to me that day, which didn't happen all the days. He asked me what was wrong, and I don't want to talk to this kid about getting into a fight with his with her. So I said, "No, nothing, just talking to Jen about something." "Oh, were you talking about your breaks?" Which is an interesting development. A few things started to click into place, like when my kid was like pulling his almost every day refusal to participate in anything or even come with the group when we walked somewhere that was between 2 and 15 minutes maximum away, he would just sit on the bench outside and sulk and refuse to move or talk to anybody. So anyway, like I said last week, these kids, they lost their mom when they were young. They're still young, and they tend to gravitate towards female authority figures, and that's why they hired me. And the other guy that was working with one of the other brothers was also a man with a dick, and they tend to like suck up to, like, the mommy thing was not good in previous summers for these kids. They wanted these kids to participate and make some friends instead of spending the summer like sucking to some surrogate mother thing, and this summer's mommy was Jen, and kind of made it difficult to form any kind of a bond with the kid that I'm supposed to be working with if I'm always like the bad guy, like, come on, we gotta go all the way across the parking lot to sit on the bench over there and do nothing instead of doing it over here. And then he would sook outside and Jen would come and, you know, mommy would swoop in and send mean old John away with the other kids, and never had any helpful follow-up afterwards. No, like, debrief, like, okay, well, this is what was going on with him today, and this is what we talked about, and, you know, tomorrow he said he's going to do this. None of that. It was just, yep, we're good. No follow-up. No chance of me being able to handle this on my own at any point. You know, they, no tips or anything, but, they cling on to, it's kind of weird that she's kind of clinging on to the dead mom loneliness to try to, like, control these kids. I mean, it didn't work for me. I tried to relate and tell this kid that my mom died too, and he just told me that, she probably didn't like me anyway. And, he was right. But anyway, that's all for this week, boys and girls. Tune in next Monday for part three. But tune in right now, continuously, for my guest, Ian Esty. Hello.
Wow, that was, like, lamentful.
Oh, I've been holding it in for a year because I didn't want to get in trouble with HR.
Well, no kidding. I'm not even going to ask who the employer was, but wow.
I'll tell you off, Mike. It's a good organization.
No doubt.
But it's in, most of the employees are children in all senses of the word.
Well, then anybody in a supervisory level should be put through appropriate training and education on the Employment Standards Act of New Brunswick, I guess.
It turns out the Education Act of New Brunswick says that the only thing that you get is a half hour lunch anyway.
You're narrowing it down.
anyway, she was right about the breaks. Not that it's unreasonable for an organization, even if they aren't legally bound to do so, like, give the old guy a sit down for 15 minutes every
hour. Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
It makes me more productive overall.
There are other ways for you to get your sit down, though, than...
Not when I have to chase after an annoying kid. I timed it out. True. I said last week he was a little fat boy. He liked to eat, so I would sneak off during break time when he was docile, stuffing his face. Never a problem, other than just that it was happening at all. And possibly me being subconsciously a dick. Like, I'm not going to tell her I'm going for a break. I'm just going. Which, well, you know, I shouldn't have to ask.
Sometimes in high-pressure situations, you just need a break. Otherwise, other things break.
Yeah, it was very stressful, and I would go down, and I would either meditate, like I had my Headspace app on my phone, or I would just listen to music and write some jokes or something for 15 minutes. I set a timer, it's on my phone, I'd come right back up. No major issues any of the times I did it. But anyway... We're going to come back with some more Ian Esty.
Oh, everybody wants more me.
But anyway, so last summer I knew there was some problem with it was just really weird that all of a sudden the child was aware that there was a problem with the brakes. I certainly didn't tell him, so I'm starting to wonder, is she actively turning this child against me? Ooh. And that's kind of evil. So let's hear some. Oh, that's still going. Let's turn that off. Let's hear "Lady Evil" by Black Sabbath, featuring Dio.
Just south of Witches Valley, where the sun.
Lady Evil. She's the queen of the night here on St. John Forward Radio. Joined once again by Ian Esty. It's been a while. How you doing?
It's been a while. Well, it hasn't. It's been a while for the radio, but not for you and I.
No, we were hanging I see out far too much of you.
Yeah, I know the feeling's mutual, but if between you and me, if I had to be looking at you or me, I'd rather be you looking at me.
I think aside from May and my coworkers, I think you were the person that I saw the most often last week. Aww. I saw you 3 times.
I feel closer to you than I never have before.
I don't hang out with anybody 3 times a week.
You do with me, baby.
Yeah. So, Ian, you're lucky. A Dio fan.
I am a Ronnie James Dio fan. And that's at odds with me because I'm also a Kiss fan.
And is there a thing?
No, there is. There is.
Fill me in. I'm not aware of this.
There's the whole Dio...
Metal beef?
Yeah, man. The whole Dio Simmons metal beef, man. On who invented the devil horns.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah,
that's stupid.
To which Ron, it's completely dumb. You know, who cares?
Yeah, well,
I do believe it's actually part of the American Sign Language.
Well, yeah, but somebody was the first person to use it in that context.
Well, the first photograph goes to Gene Simmons, or actually the first conceptual painting goes to Gene Simmons, because he's actually depicted in painting form on the Love Gun, cover art, to which he's actually throwing the symbol, and you can clearly see it. But, you know, Ronnie says he threw it out earlier that year and just didn't get an album cover out. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it could be parallel thinking. It's like comedians arguing over, like, the most obvious premise.
Yeah, I know.
Like thought of it.
Like when Pokemon Go came out, everybody wrote the same easy joke.
Yeah. What was the joke?
Well, I don't know about everybody else's, but I had one that I never, ever took out on a stage, which was kind of, as with everything I do, based on a true story. Mm. So I was sitting in those little statue places down in front of Barber's General Store at the bottom of King Street. And I'm sitting there, and there's this father who's obviously in his 40s and got his beer baby going, and this kid, and they're like, "Oh, daddy, I think there's one close by." And he said, "Oh, what do you think it is, son? Do you think it's a..." Of course, all's daddy knows is Pikachu. Mm-hmm. "Do you think it's a Pika, Pika, Paka, Paka, Pika, Pika thingy?" And kid says, I don't know. Where is it? So I don't have it on my phone, but I open up my phone. I'm like, hey, guys. I think I saw a Peekaboobies down over there. And the dad looks at me and goes, "What?" I said, "Yeah, there's a Peekaboobies right over there. You better go get it." And the boy's eyes, he has to be like 12, 13 years old. And his eyes light up like a frigging Christmas tree or a Roman candle. And he looks up at his dad. He goes, "I don't know what he was peeking at, but let's go check it out, Dad." And off they go. Dad didn't get it.
Classic Ian Esty.
Classic Ian Esty. Come on, it was funny at the moment. Then you turned me down.
I had like a half-formed something of another about like a pedophile using it to lure kids or something.
No, not that dark.
No, that was my half-formed unused Pokemon Go.
You know, it's no difference than listening to Mark Splute and Arif Hussein argue the same side of an argument. Except, like, they're actually arguing something different.
Yeah, that happens. But, zeitgeist. But jokes, though. Like, for, like, the headliner on at Chuckles, who I hear was a lovely guy. I don't need to... You can look up who was playing if you really want to know who it is. But I don't need to besmirch somebody's name in case somebody doesn't know who it is. But it was just really obvious, like, premises. Like, probably didn't. I'm not saying he stole the jokes, but they're just stuff that's so obvious that I've heard, like, they're just typical, like, old guy comedian stuff. Like, he had one joke about how old cell phones these days, you can't hang up in someone's ear like you used to be able to. You just hit the button on your phone. Remember on phones when you could just slam it? Like, I've heard that a bunch of times, and it's not terribly interesting.
It is true, but it's like, you know, it comes down to everybody has, like, the human experience is amazingly limited, right? And if you talk about storylines, there's only so many plot lines, therefore there can be only so many premises per...
Yeah, but the entire set was all stuff, like, in that ballpark, and it was all just, yep, another one of these. And I don't know. That's boring. The audience loved it, so, and I'm not the expert on comedy. It just wasn't for me. It felt like...
You're not the expert on comedy.
No, I'm not. But to me, it felt like the stuff that I would watch, like, just evening at the Improv, garbage on TV, just because there was no other option.
Well, you don't think somebody's bringing their A material to St. John, New Brunswick, do you?
Well,
I mean, it's not like
they should have it. Like, it just felt like everything was at least 15 years old and very tired. And like I said, the occasional like, oh wait, I used to do this joke in the 90s, but it talks about answering machines, so I've got to shoehorn in like a, I don't know this technology these days. Remember back when we had this thing? And then he'd just tell his old tired 90s joke.
That's a premise that's been around since comedy.
Yeah.
Really.
It's lazy.
I remember watching Andy and Amos and the telephone confounding them and, you know, throwing back to the good old-fashioned telegraph. They did. It's true.
Yeah,
the premise hasn't changed. Right?
Yeah, I know exactly. You know, but you know,
somewhere
comedians,
Og was given grog. You know, grief over smoke signals. We don't need communication over distances. If they want to know what we're talking about, they can come read the cave. They can read the cave like I did when I was growing up.
But it's the comedian's job and responsibility to find new surprising things. That's what I'm looking for anyway. I don't want to hear the same old stuff. If I've had stuff that I've only kind of half thought of that I've never used, and then I hear somebody else that has a similar premise, and whether it's better or worse than what I was going to do, I don't bother.
Do you Google jokes?
No.
Neither do I.
But there's been occasion where I come up with something that I feel like it is so obvious I cannot be the first person to think about this. And in that case, I'll shop it around to the other comedians and say, like, am I stealing this from somebody? And so far, so good. But I'm sure there's some overlap. But there's been times like I've gone back and re-listened to like an old Bill Hicks album that I hadn't listened to in like a decade, and I'm like, oh, that's just like in my joke where I say this thing. Oops.
But again, you know, I really don't think there's an original anything to say. I don't. You can change the nouns, you can change the dates, but eventually all premises have been covered. And all
but
you
even,
can do
even
is
if
find
there's a
your
new way to do it,
voice.
But I don't want to listen to anybody that I feel like I've heard it before.
Well, it's like trying to write a song, right? Because I only have 7 notes in the major musical scale to work with, and so many time signatures that are viable for my, you know, old middle-age fingers to play. So there's only so many things I can write. So all I can do, and all I can, you know, because if I'm soloing, even if I'm writing a solo in the major or minor pentatonic scale, which if you're a musician, everybody's following what I'm saying, there are only so many notes in that scale I can draw from. So what makes a song unique to me? Well, hopefully it's a combination of the notes I've chosen to play, the words I've chosen to write, and my own unique flavor. But I can't bring a unique premise. I can only bring a, you know, at best a half unique voice, right?
Yeah, well, and just like comedy, some people like a certain kind of music and they don't like to go on. But I feel like with anything, every person is a unique, beautiful snowflake.
Oh, it's true.
And they bring that experience to it. And
it's true. And that's knowing your audience.
And when you run out of ways to write a rock song, then somebody invents a new kind of music, and that's a whole new thing, and that keeps happening.
Absolutely.
like rap came around, and that was a new thing. Nobody ever had songs like that before.
But now
it all builds on itself, but it's a way, like, all right, this has all been done, I'm tired of it, so let's try this instead. And even like all the weird electronic music that's out now that I don't understand, that doesn't sound like Bob Seger.
No, and nor should it, but still within genres, there's a saturation point where rock and roll is dead. You'll never see, you know.
There's still lots of good rock albums coming out.
Yes, ish, there are. What was the last great rock album you listened to? Well, start to back. I mean, like an album, start to back.
Well, let's
don't Google
let's,
it.
No, I'm looking at my current Spotify list and see what's out.
But start to finish, song 1 to song 10, right? The last one, I'll tell you the last great album I heard was Celebration Rock by the Chip Androids. So much that I actually went down to see Gordy Tufts and I asked him to order it for me. And it was brilliant.
This is a few years ago, but the second Ghost album was really solid, start to finish. I like pretty much every album that Opeth puts out.
Love Opeth, yeah.
Clutch puts out.
Yeah.
That's stuff that I've been listening to for years, but there is new stuff that comes out that I really like that comes up just on my Spotify, picks out 30 songs that it thinks that I like based on their algorithms every week, and there's some really good stuff in there.
You know, okay, but you know, even when you're talking about
Le Butcherettes,
but even when you're
on my thing this week, that's a good band.
That's new. I actually have to show, you just introduced me to one, so I'll have to check them out. But you talk about Opeth, I mean, geez, man, they've been around, what, 12, 13, 14, 15 years now? They've been around a long time.
Since the early 2000s, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've been around a long time, so I don't know how I'd classify them, but when I, as an old or new, or if they're still putting out good albums or not, I'd actually have to check. I haven't heard an Opeth album. I haven't heard their last one,
yeah,
for sure.
No, they're all
but,
solid.
You know, I find my frustration with music is the same with my frustration with comedy. I just had to stop watching comedy specials on Netflix. I had to. I did join the George Carlin Sirius channel, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's so funny. It's like 24 hours of George Carlin bits. Eventually, you can... It wears out its novelty fairly quick, but...
Yeah, I haven't gone back and listened to George in a while, but yeah, that's one that holds up, because I don't know, I feel like my favorite comedy is very personality driven, so I think regardless of the words being said, if it's going through the filter of that person, that's kind of what I gravitate towards.
And
Carlin, like, I don't know who the current Carlin is. It was funny, I actually I was watching like an old clip where Carlin and Richard Pryor were both on like a talk show or something in the 70s, and George Carlin did a set, and I found he back before he got like super political and he was more like wordplay kind of stuff, he sounded a lot like Mark Splude, and I never really made that connection before. So that's there. I don't know. I still think you're not supposed to talk about it, but you know, like Louis C.K., like I think he's doing like the, my kids are annoying is a standard thing.
No, but you can talk about
it.
I know. You know, just, I'm sorry. And I refuse. It's like the whole Gian Gomeshi thing. And when that was all fresh and raw, and nobody's defending it. That's not what anybody's saying. But when it was all fresh and raw, the CBC, in their fine fashion, were getting ready to delete old backlog queue archives. And, you know, just because something bad happened today, it does not invalidate the art that was created before. And, you know, it's still okay to talk about the funny and the brilliance of a Louis C.K., despite, and not necessarily, you know, defend him in that forum, but still accept the creative body of work for the brilliance that it was. The same with the other fellow who was found guilty in court not too long ago.
Cosby.
Yeah. You know, the same with him.
Well, like last year, I went back and watched Himself, not sure if I could still enjoy it, and it still holds up. I'm upset about the Louis C.K. thing than most of the male comedians in our orbit, but I'm not going to, I don't think that the record should be wiped clean of all evidence that he ever existed. And if he puts out a new album,
agree,
I'm still probably going to listen. I'm going to watch the special. If he comes, I'm going to come see him. At least in that case, Cosby's different because he never really took ownership of it. He's still to this day denying it and was kind of actually smug about it.
Totally agree. And I'm not, again, defending that, nor am I defending the body of work. What I'm saying is it's okay to reflect on the body of work and say, you know what, that's just damn funny. I know he did some terrible stuff, but that's a funny bit.
So anyway, regardless of my hedging, my apologizing for it, but Louis C.K. I think was doing something that builds on previous history of comedy, but it seems like a new way to do like the single dad, like my little kid's a bitch kind of thing. And like if you write down just the list of premises, maybe it's not revolutionary, but I think the way that he did it is, and I don't know, that's what I gravitate
towards. Well, it's an original voice, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, so when you see guys like hitting the circuit, and it's just, it feels more like this is my act, and I'm just showing you, which is fine. That's a form of entertainment, but that's not what I'm interested in. So, you know, I got tired of it, and I had a new video game I wanted to play, and I knew you guys would take forever to film on Sunday. So.
Oh, geez, did we ever... Oh, my God, that was... But, you know, I saw the... in case anybody's wondering, we're talking about Hard Times Season 2.
Well, let's take a song break, and then we can come back and talk about that. Ooh. What do you want to... do you want to set up your selection
here? Yeah, so my... It should be obvious that I'm kind of getting disillusioned with music and what music is kind of becoming. There are certainly exceptions. So I've been reaching into the past, and, you know, back in the mid-80s, I was discovering punk and really grooving on punk. So I threw a couple of options, and I wishy-washed at you today, but I decided for a couple of personal reasons that I wanted to hear the Dead Milkmen's Methodist Coloring Book.
All right. After these brief words on St. John Forward Radio.
So, you're getting rid of some small household items and gently used clothing and just don't know what to do with them? Join Diabetes Canada's Declutter and Donate Challenge, and we'll pick them up for free. Keep your items out of a landfill and help fund diabetes research. You could say what you don't want does a whole lot. Schedule your free home pickup today at declutter.diabetes.ca. That's declutter.diabetes.ca.
Nailed it.
Terrified.
Nailed it.
Terrified.
Nailed it.
Terrified.
You're listening to 107.3 St. John Forward Radio.
Creepier.
Hi. You're listening to 107.3 St. John Forward Radio.
Nailed it.
Terrified.
Dead Milkmen on St. John Forward Radio, as requested by Ian Esty here.
Don't color outside the lines, people. God will tolerate many things, but he will not tolerate
edgy stuff. So we touched on it a little bit, but we're in the midst of filming Hard Times season 2. We filmed bits of we seem to be doing it backwards. Is the stuff that we shot is for the season 2 first episode, right?
Yeah. So a lot of very rarely does this stuff get shot sequentially. My episode is wrapped, and we shot that based on our guest star's availability. So, you know, episode 7.
It's been announced, you can say.
Yeah, it's Bernard Robichaud. Or Robichaud. It's Robichaud. Bernard Robichaud, his claim to fame, among other things, he's just not bottlenecked into this, but he was Cyrus on the Trailer Park Boys for a couple of seasons, and maybe more. We don't know.
I'm not sure. I was not familiar with the character. I've probably seen 10 episodes of Trailer Park Boys scattered throughout the seasons. So.
He had a gun and a Trans Am, and he was a foil for the boys. At any rate, he's a big fan of our show, and we got him. And he had so much fun, and we had so much fun with him because he was such a nice and engaging guy. You know, we had the opportunity to have lunch with him, and we asked him questions about, you know, we had Mark Splude there and Matt Copeland and myself and James Hovey and a few other people. So we had the opportunity to talk to him, and you'd almost think with these guys, it's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about my time with Trailer Park Boys. But no, he answered pretty much all our questions. Very open, very engaging. Loves a Caesar. Yeah, enjoys a Caesar. I noticed he had a Caesar during his lunch. Came back and knocked his lines out of the park afterwards. No exaggeration.
I wasn't in those scenes, so I never got the brush with the stars.
He does stand-up.
Yeah?
Yeah, he actually, at lunch, decided to run a routine with us, to run a bit. And not a word of a lie, he had Mark Splude crying over his shrimp. Yeah. He did, yeah. The shrimp was crying over his shrimp. It was quite ironic.
Yeah. Yeah. Does he have stuff on YouTube of him doing stand-up?
I'm not entirely sure. I haven't really dug that far into it, but he.
So I gotta be honest. I saw at the Evolve Music Festival in 2 or 3 years ago. Last time I went, Randy and Leahy were there, mm-hmm. and that was brutal.
Yeah, he actually talked to us about that. There's an amount of gigs that they book as the Trailer Park Boys, and they don't prepare anything. They just get up and riff, kind of.
Well, they didn't
in
even
character.
Do that. They just. But laid out some fucking oops.
Yeah, like
some,
a scene.
Just catchphrases.
Are you comfortable, John?
Cheeseburgers, slap in the belly, gay joke, and that was it. And everybody loved it, but I hate it. It was terrible.
He talked about that, but no, he hit us with his own. Like, this wasn't him doing Cyrus. This was him doing him talking about a personal experience. Like, I won't.
Well, it seems like he's probably. Like written something, which is different than just a couple of actors who are used to having scripts written for them.
That's right.
Farting around on stage.
That's right.
And for people like it because they recognize them and like, oh, that's the thing.
Oh, the catch line. Say the catch line. Hey, blank off, will you? He said it. Did you hear that? He said it. I saw it.
Evolve Music Festival did not have super... deep like comedy nerds. People were just like into it, whatever. And I performed for a dozen stoned hippies sitting in the dirt at noon.
Nice. Did you get a chuckle out of them?
Yeah.
That must be difficult.
No, it wasn't too bad. It was a thin audience, but I did all right.
I've played to some stoned hippies in a musical sort of vibe, and it's never too hard to get a reaction out of them. You just got to kind of drone on in D for 5 minutes, and they're happy.
Well, I've heard about people doing like pot club shows. And
lament
stuff like
sadness.
That. That's hard. I remember it that I did okay, but like 2 or 3 years ago, I was a much worse comedian than I am now, so it was probably terrible.
Weren't we all?
Yeah.
Aren't we all? And then 3 years from now, we'll look back. And
yeah, I know. I think I was more cocky about my abilities probably like 4 years ago than anything, but I'm 4 years better now and have no self-esteem.
Cockiness is a fake way of trying to convince people that, well, you know what you're doing when you don't. Really,
yeah. And it isn't you need to do that somewhat. I keep telling our
fake it till you make it.
Just pretend that you don't hate yourself for 10 minutes, and the audience won't too. But
like, he did well on Sunday. RF did.
Yeah. He RF was in the scenes.
Dr. Wagon Burner.
Mark Splude. Yes. Anyway, we're talking about the Hard Times web series. There'll be a link on the website in the podcast notes, or you can just look it up on YouTube. There's a Hard Times channel, I believe.
There is a Hard Times channel on both Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah, but I've had the link in the show notes for all sorts of episodes. So if you're listening to this live on the radio, you can still go to johnforward.podbean.com and just look at a previous episode, and there's a link to Hard Times in there.
Oh, yeah, or you could just do it and put it in the Google, and there it is. So, well, you should put Hard Times in the Maritimes, or else you're going to get all sorts of web series with the same name. Because apparently that's a common theme, too. Yeah. People have hard times no matter where they live.
Yeah.
Hard times in Philadelphia, hard times in Tuktoyaktuk. Everybody's having hard times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a Hard Times in the Maritimes drawing from the zine on the inside of the wall over there. but yeah, that's and there's more time to work on season two. So there have been some complaints about some of the quality in season one we discussed a little earlier.
Yeah, well, there have been, but unlike what we get accused of ripping off an awful lot, which is like a professional production like the Trailer Park Boys, we're staffed with comedians as actors. We're not paying editors that have day jobs and this strange deadline of a welfare day every month that for some odd reason we absolutely can't miss. So yeah,
but for a fair comparison, and I don't mind throwing a little bit of shade,
sure,
the closest thing that would be a fair comparison to Hard Times is there's another local web series called Hurtin'.
Yeah
I've watched some of it.
That's Eric Braun's show.
It is awful. Just
subjectively,
awful. Everything that I know, no redeeming qualities. I don't actually.
Eric is a Eric Braun is very heavily involved with that, and I like his show. I think it's all right. I think they're doing good things, and just like they have the same production troubles that we have, running a show that is primarily self-funded, and for what it is, it is just fine. The writing is quite lovely.
Anyway, you can be the good cop. I don't like
I'm not being the good cop. I have some critique.
I had kind of a weird interaction with Eric Braun, which didn't help things, but still.
He does good work.
I've also got former issues with another cast member.
He's I played in a band with Eric. I played in a band with Eric, not for too long, and he's a fellow member of the New Brunswick Film Co-op. I think he's teaching a course. I'm actually going to go and try and sit in on his course in St. John this year on field audio and see what his take on field audio is.
Yeah, I ran into him at a party in the early days of Hard Times when we were just doing the prequel cell phone stuff, and mm-hmm. he kind of not so smoothly kind of worked in. It was sort of like a "you guys are ripping us off" conversation, and I'm like, I'm a hired gun on this.
That comes down to the fact that there's no original premise.
Yeah.
And look, if you're going to do a show about people in the Maritimes, you know, like common people, you know, I mean, as common, and we're not really that common. Our characters are so over exaggerated and there's so much hyperbole and everything, it isn't funny. But, you know, we've got our hard working minimum wage stiff that has to hold down two jobs while his scammer friend works every system that there is in place. And, you know, we have our drug dealer, and our drug dealer, through the course of season one, finds God. And, you know, it's all overstated and overblown. And because of that, you know, every project with an original premise is going to sound that like. But I'm gonna say
my character Dick Johnson, I believe, is the only openly open cuckold character in sitcom history.
Yeah. Can you say that on the air?
Why not?
Oh, good. I'll say it too.
Hey, this is a safe space, and we don't judge people based on their sexual proclivities.
No, as a matter of fact,
there's nothing wrong with consenting adults.
I love diversity. I love diversity, as so long as everybody's happy and everybody's safe. You know, it makes for great comedy.
My character,
if everybody thoroughly
enjoys,
there would be no funny.
His wife has sex with everybody in town.
I know, for doesn't he?
My viewing pleasure.
Doesn't he? Even when your character's down and out in a clown suit in the gutter,
yeah,
he still shows the respect for the voyage that is.
It's a love story, really.
No,
some
people love different things.
There's nobody willing to play the wife, so she's probably forever going to be a voice on the other end of the phone.
Did we even, you know, I don't think we physically described her. I don't think there's any reference.
I think it's better to leave it nebulous.
I think so, too, and let people form their own opinion of what this wonderful lady must look like.
Yeah, like most, maybe a POV shot where you just see, like, legs.
I'll pitch it to Matt in the next writer's meeting.
We'll get some stunt legs.
Stunt legs. I think I know where I can get a pair of those.
that's been fun, and that was my artistic contribution. I'm not one of the full main characters. I think there's more of me going to be in season two. I'm not
from the scripts I've read, or at least in my episode, there was a lot of you.
Yeah, he has big ideas because of my fantastic acting in season one. He actually sent me a message on our way here saying that he saw the stuff from yesterday, and my passed out outside footage was my finest work yet. You can see a picture of me as passed out drunken Dick Johnson on Facebook.
the words Jesus Christ came out of your mouth several times. It almost sounded like it was a loop.
Was I praying?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't remember saying Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah, okay. I usually say Jesus Christ whenever I answer. I get angry at my phone when
the Lord. The Lord. Your character. Your character said the name of the Lord.
In vain.
A Lord.
Because we take no prisoners on hard times.
No.
That's right, Lord. We're taking your name in vain.
And really, what, Madonna's kid there? Lord, or is that Lord S? Anyway, doesn't matter. But that's the thing about hard times that I really like. I mean, short, fat, big or tall, oh my God, we love them all. We take a swipe at everything, everyone. There's no holds barred, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Or no jokes barred. At the last second, I was going to go NJB, and then I pulled back.
There's some jokes barred. I've had a couple of lines that was decided were a little bit too much.
True. Oh, actually, that's actually very true. Brian, one of our guest stars, Brian Giles, actually, who works with children as a teacher, was involved in a few rewrites of scenes he was in because he felt it was a little too edgy for his day life, and we had to do some rewrites around that. But what he came up with was actually, you know,
yeah. Well, that's what
funny.
Mine is. There's been stuff. I've had some scripts come my way with some. I know it's the character, and I shouldn't care that this guy is saying something horrible. But I spent some time. But I was never like, nope, I don't want to do this. I would always come up with a better version of it.
But that's your buy-in, right? Because as a volunteer, where's your reward? And your reward is helping to develop your character. And look, Matt Copeland is I'm going to say the G word, and I know it gets thrown out there far too often, but Matt Copeland is a great comedy writer, and his writing's getting better and better and better. But that's not what makes him a great comedy writer. The scripts that he brings are good. What makes him a great comedy writer is allowing the people playing the characters to bring their perspectives, their suggestions, and their lines. Because I've been on sets where, oh my God, man, just don't let the writer show up on set. Leave him out of it.
And what I meant when I said there was some, because there was a few things that I in character was going to say that were a bit filthy. That too much. Matt doesn't like any sexual talk involving fecal matter. That seems to be one of his lines, I've discovered.
Is that the thing you can't cross?
Because we've
had chocolate covered fish sticks representing stuff. We've had, you know.
Well, there was the poop in the hallway, but I don't think we saw that.
There was
that's,
this,
but in a sexual enjoying it context, not so much.
My. So that's the line, eh?
So far,
that's Matt Copeland's line in the sand.
But yeah, and I don't mind it. It's his show, so if he's letting me rewrite 90% of my dialogue, so if he's got a problem with this thing or that thing, I'm fine. That's his business. I take direction.
You do that. We're blowing up. We've got over 10,000 views. It's really a good thing, and if anybody really wants to know what this is all about, check it out. Go to Google, check out Hard Times in the Maritimes. You will find us, and a good time was had by some.
Yeah, so we're too late for another song, so we'll just barrel through. I was going to ask you about, I went out to the Foundation's comedy show on Friday. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that for a couple
absolutely.
Minutes? Yeah,
absolutely. First thing I want to say is a tip of the hat to all the performers that were there, because they were troopers. Yeah. They were troopers. So this kind of came out in a funny way. The owner of the building is a huge Mark Splood fan and a huge Hard Times fan. And his promoter, it's actually the old Buffalo Club. And it had kind of a transformation in between the old Buffalo Club and what it is now. So it was a bar of people with alternative, you know, leanings to go and enjoy their company. And
It was a gay bar.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in there as a gay bar. It was a swinging place, baby. I'm not kidding. Okay. And literally swinging, like there's a pole in the corner. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's been converted into, well, it's being converted or turned into an event venue. And the promoter got a hold of me and said, we want to do comedy. And I said, well, this is going to be a bad night for it, because we've got, you know, sold out night at Chuckles, and there's a couple other shows in town. And they said, well, we're going to do it with or without you, so do you want to do it or not? And I said, sure. Mm-hmm. So we put a show together for 7 people. So I brought in Brian Giles from Calais, Maine. I brought in Sam Laidman, Travis Boyce, Shand, and of course myself. And every one of them got up and played to 7 women at a table, and then you and Arif at a table, right stage front and center.
Yeah.
But they played like you guys were 20,000 people. It was amazing and funny. Everyone was funny. And
it was a fun show. And yeah, I got there and there was hardly anybody there. I was like, oh man. But I enjoyed myself, and me and Arif had fun just giving very enthusiastic laughter and applause at inappropriate times.
That was the best, though. I mean, and what was even funnier, normally, and you got to understand, everyone, when I say this, context is everything, okay? But John and Arif, as audience members, more than once got bigger laughs than some of us did on stage, which was, and it wasn't done in a mean way. It was really well-timed and funny, and the comics loved it.
Yeah, we weren't heckling.
No, not at all.
I'm not sure what I would call it. It was something.
It was enthusiastic response at the most inopportune times, right?
Yeah.
It was a fantastic counter.
Yeah, and it worked. That could have been annoying. It felt like, I wouldn't do it for comedians that didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. But it wasn't all night, and it was well-timed.
They rolled with it.
Yeah.
So,
you two were our crowd work for the most part.
So are these going to continue? Is there a second one lined up yet?
There is a second one lined up. I was asked if I would roll the comedians together. It looks like they want to do the second Friday of every month.
Yeah.
And at least that's what I highly encourage them to do. So if there's any comics out there...
You know, wait, you're not stepping on my toes.
Oh, hell no. Hell no, actually, I kind of subtly asked you for one of your flyers there once when we were playing D&D. He's like, so John, remind me again when your shows are. It's flyer, yoink. I'm like, good, thank you. We'll shove that over there. You know, but I got to tell you, in all honesty, I don't know if we need too many more shows, or do we?
It's starting to get saturated.
I think so.
If we could get audience to come to them all, then that would be good. But having... Yeah. 15 different open mics with no audience isn't going to do anybody any favors.
No,
but not at all. But you know, if somebody wants to put them on, whatever, we get practice either
I can't
way.
Well, you know what, and I was saying this to somebody just this afternoon, what a great problem to have. I remember being a musician in this town in 1990, and we had three venues to play. Yeah. We had the 3 Mile, we had O'Leary's, and then right across the street from O'Leary's there was a place called Nippers, and you know, we had three venues to play. And oh my God, just like in the span of 20 years, we've got venues, we've got music, we've got comedy, we've got whatever the hell we want
to
see.
And I've got to wrap up the show. Sorry to cut you off.
I saw it in your body language.
This Friday, No Jokes Bar Deluxe at O'Leary's. I'm headlining. Chris Trotter's hosting. She's in the intro to this show. Shand, Eric Chason, and Corey Hartland is going to be there. So check that out. That's all I'm going to say. We got to get some fit in the outro song before the thing cuts off. Thank you, Ian Esty, for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
St. John Forward Radio.